Hello and welcome to the Under Center podcast. I am your host, Darren Maher, and I am joined by two members of the Tim Tebow fan club, Fionn Molloy and Jake Woolhead. Lads, how is the petition to get Tebow back in the league go?
Okay, I think we can all agree that we would love to see Tebow back in the league, if not for the shits and gig, just for the pure meme-worthy name that Tebow follows around.
Well, he's retired from baseball, so he probably has a bit more spare time on his hands at the moment, so that might convince him.
Yeah, for sure.
I think the Broncos need a quarterback as well. Probably better than Drew Lock.
Well, look, Washington are going to release Alex Smith, so they're in on the search for
Turns out we never wanted him there in the first place. That makes sense. We didn't even want him there.
You were in love with him, don't you?
You're only here for the news story.
Well, that's a little harsh now. Come on. Yeah, well, actually, 6 touchdowns, 9 interceptions in his time was sort of clouded by the fact that he came back and the fact that he was playing football was the miraculous stuff. But we have a packed show this week. We're going to be talking about J.J. Watt and his move to the Cardinals. We'll be looking to break down the 17th game week proposal that's going to be coming in from next season. Proposals were leaked at the start of the week. We're also continuing our off-season series, and this week we're going to be talking about the Green Bay Packers and the Cincinnati Bengals. On the show this week, we are delighted to have Packers fan Connor Dice. And on the Bengals side, we have the host of the unofficial Bengals podcast, that is Frank LaPlaca. Guys, it's great to have you both on. How's the off-season been for you so far?
The offseason is going slowly so far. I can't wait for free agency and the draft to start. Obviously, the Bengals have a lot of holes to fill. So, we're going to take it a month at a time. We have free agency in March. We have the draft in April. Then mini camps will start up. Then, before you know, we'll be back playing football in September.
Connor, how's yours been going so far?
Yeah, it hasn't been too bad. All I see is reports of how the Packers are over the cap and dreading over who we're going to have to lose is more my concern.
Well, there's definitely a few names on that roster that potentially that you're going to lose that I wouldn't mind coming over to Seattle to help us out. But we'll get into that later on. We'll get into that later on in the show. Also, just for anyone that is watching us on YouTube, you may not be able to see Frank. Unfortunately, the Gremlins are in the system at the moment, so we can get them very clearly on audio, but we can't seem to get the picture just right. So hopefully if we can get a fixture on the show, great. If not, then you'll just have to obviously make do with our four lovely faces instead. Before we get into the news, like I said, if you are watching us on YouTube, please, if you can, like this video and subscribe to the Dynamo Podcast Network. That is where you'll find our podcast each and every week, as well as many other great podcasts like Dynamo's Dozen for you pop culture and wrestling interview fans. And we have the Retrotainment Podcast for you nostalgic film and TV show fans as well. Also, while you're at it, give us a follow on Facebook at facebook.com/UnderCenterPod. We're also at Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at UnderCenterPod. We're going to start the news off this week with the biggest move of the offseason so far, and that is J.J. Watt deciding to join the Arizona Cardinals on a 2-year deal for $31 million. 23 of that is guaranteed. I'll start with you, Fionn. What did you make of the move?
I think it was quite a surprise. I'm not sure the Cardinals were necessarily high on anybody's list. It certainly wasn't on any list that we were talking about last week when we kind of went through places where we thought he might land. So I think it's a very good deal for him. The Cardinals are a good team. I think definitely an improvement on where the Texans are, especially when they lose Watson, which it looks like is very likely. Reports came out he's had a discussion with the new GM and head coach and said there's no keeping me here, I want out. So that's a dumpster fire now. So good for him to get out. Nice contract. I think it's on the high end of what people expected him to get. So I think he'd be happy with that. A lot of guaranteed money. Players are always happy with that. And I think it's an improving Cardinals team and a specifically Cardinals defense. And I think that'll make him very happy. So I think all around pretty good move, both for the player and for the team. I like it a lot.
Yeah, you mentioned the guaranteed money. I think he got way more with the Cardinals than with any other team. I think the next highest offer was something like $12 million on the guaranteed. And like, clearly you're going to accept the $23 million over 12. Yeah, I mean, it'll be really exciting to watch to J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones to line up against each other for maybe the two games a year that they're both playing and both not injured at the same time. Well, we can all agree, the Cardinals defense, if they can bring back a lot of those guys, it's going to be an exciting defense to watching when on the other side of the ball with Kyler Murray and a lot of them playmakers they have, it's going to be a good team to watch. Very exciting to look forward to. I just seen today as well that he's going to be wearing number 99 as well. So, new number for him.
Yeah, did he have to pay money? Did anybody on the roster already have that number?
Officially, that jersey was retired, so he had to ask permission to get it, which he did. But Frank, I'd love to hear your thoughts. What do you think on J.J. Watt now making the move over to the NFC?
Yeah, there was a couple things that went into play, and I definitely agree with you guys. One, getting that large amount of guaranteed money was a big thing. And even geographically, Arizona is not that far from Houston, so it's not like he's uprooting his life and moving across the country. So, I you know, as a player, I believe that he's lost a step over the last couple of years. But you put him with Chandler Jones on that defense, and like you said, maybe for the two or three games that they're healthy, that's a pretty strong defensive line. So, you know, he's going to make a big impact there. The only thing is, I thought he was going to go to a team that was going to immediately contend for the Super Bowl. Maybe he's feeling that about the Cardinals, but I'm not sure that they're a year away from going to the Super Bowl. You know, I was seeing him on, you know, you never know, going to the Buccaneers, the Chiefs, or, you know, one of the, you know, maybe somebody in the AFC North. But, you know, the fact that he went out there, I think it was the money, fairly close to home, and a new beginning. And they, you know, they do have a fresh young offense. So, you know, there's possibilities there. But again, the surprise was that he didn't go immediately to a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah. Speaking of close to home as well, Connor, there was a lot of speculation that he was going to go to Wisconsin and to the Packers. For, of course, a move that hasn't come to fruition. Are you a little disappointed to miss out on what?
I am, but I think it was always just a dream. Like, we never had the cap space to fit him in there. Like, you see the amount he got. Like, I think we're minus 15 or 18 or something. Like, he was never coming over to ourselves. And as much as I feel like we could have been, and you never know, we could have actually beat Tampa if we had someone like that to put pressure on Brady, but shook.
Probably could have always gotten rid of Devontae or something just for an old ass JJ.
Yeah, Jettison Rogers. That contract must be huge. That would save a load of cap space.
Jordan Love take over you.
That's what he's there for.
Yeah, it is Jordan Love.
Yeah, it is a bit of an odd move now, I think, in my opinion, to the Cardinals. I think, Frank, you said it as well. He wanted to join a contender. And are the Cardinals really a contender? Now, I'm talking about this now minus my Seahawks bias. I'm going to try and stay out as much as I can here with this. But, you know, there's a lot of free agents on that defense, especially coming up this year. You got Patrick Peterson, Hassan Reddick, Corey Peters, Marcus Golden, Drake Kirkpatrick, Jonathan Joseph, just to name a few. So there's a lot of players to re-sign in a season, obviously, where the cap is going to be smaller. And now you're paying J.J. Watt as much as you're paying J.J. Watt. So I don't know if, you know, it's adding to an already good defense, because it was a defense that did have its issues last season as well. You know, maybe, like, if you re-signed the players that they already had on the team, like, I think maybe Hassan Reddick would have been the better option to sort of re-sign. You might have gotten a little cheaper as well than J.J. Watt and use that spare cash to help up your offensive line, because that fell apart at times last season. You know, saving, like, possibly some good news as well that could come out of this move is because on the Seahawks side of things, you might now see with Watt there, Chandler Jones, Aaron Donald, Nick Bosa, maybe Russell Wilson will get what he wants this year, and he will get a decent O-line because
He wants to jump ship. We all know it.
Listen, I'm just trying to speak from the positive side of my brain, because, you know, I just find it helps me live longer if I do that. But yeah, like I said, it is an interesting move. I do like the way he announced it, sort of beating the likes of Rappaport and Schefter to it and just announcing it himself. Because I think that morning there was some weird speculation about his Peloton user profile had like three teams in it, and everyone thought they were the three teams he was going to go to. And he had to come out and say he doesn't even own a Peloton account or doesn't even own a bike. So that was pretty funny at the way it was announced. So look,
how much do you think he had to pay the FedEx guy who delivered the package with like Cardinals logos all over for that t-shirt that he's wearing? He's like, oh my god.
I say he probably went into one of those t-shirt printing shops, and just say, look, listen, be quiet. Or he might have got like four or five different teams made, and there's like, I'm choosing one of them, you know.
Yeah, 32 t-shirts made.
32 t-shirts made, there you go. Well, 31, because he wasn't going back to the Texans. I knew for sure.
Could have been a big news.
Yeah, him and Watson deciding to stay on the same day. Let's see how that goes. We'll move on, and we'll talk a little bit about the proposed 17th game next season. Earlier this week, Peter King sort of broke the news that there is a potential for a 17th game week in the 2021 season. So I'm going to try my best to explain it, and hopefully if you're listening carefully, you will not get lost. So under the leagues that were proposed, the extra game will be an interconference game, so AFC versus NFC, and from 2021 the AFC sides will be at home, and then in 2022 the NFC sides will be at home, and they'll switch each year after that. Okay, so the game comes down to standings in the previous year and who the team played in the season before. So for an example, for those who aren't aware, every season, one division from the AFC plays a division from the NFC and changes each year. So to decide which division plays which, we have to go back two seasons, so to the 2019 year. So for example, in that year, the NFC West played the AFC North. So we'll just use that as an example for this going forward. So, and then to find out which sides play each other, the teams that finished first in the NFC West in this season just gone, the 2020 season, will face the team that finished first in the AFC North, and second faces second, third faces third. So I have the full list of proposed fixtures, and there are some interesting ones there for sure. So I will start with the AFC West. I would then play the AFC North. So you got the Seahawks at the Steelers, the Rams at the Ravens, the Cardinals at the Browns, and the 49ers at the Bengals. Then going down, you would have the NFC North against the AFC West. So that's Packers at Chiefs, Bears at Raiders, Vikings at Chargers, Lions at Broncos. Then for the NFC East, going up against the AFC East, Washington travels to Buffalo, Giants at Dolphins, Cowboys at Patriots, Eagles at Jets. And then finally, you have the NFC South going up against the AFC South. So that's Saints at Titans, Bucks at Colts, Panthers, at Texans, Falcons at Jaguars. So it's a lot to cram in there, a lot of information to get in about 2 minutes. But from hopefully the way I explained it, Jake, what do you think about the proposed way of making the 17th game next year?
Well, I'm going to first preface this by saying more football, more funny. So I'm not complaining that there's a 17th week here, and there's plenty more games, and there's definitely some exciting games. I know I'd be looking forward to a Chiefs-Packers matchup. I know Connor might not necessarily be looking forward to that, but for me personally, I think the last week should be divisional matchups. That's where the excitement of a last week is for me. So like, while I agree with the way it's done, I think it should be week 16, and then week 17 is going to be your
interdivision. Yeah, no, I don't think this game would be taking place in week 17. It's just an extra fixture. We don't know when in the schedule it would take part.
Oh, that's okay then. But absolutely, like, that would be it's a good way of doing it. It gives a lot of fair but it'd be like a good regulation way of doing it, so everybody gets a good run around, bar unless you come up against the next Patriots dynasty-esque team where you end up playing the same teams every year, which kind of would get a bit arbitrary. But I do like it. I think it's a good idea. It's good innovation, and certainly a good use of a 17th game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very complicated, but I mean, the NFL are not adverse to that. Their current scheduling method is quite complicated as well, with bye weeks and international travel weeks and all this stuff. So I don't think they're going to shy away from that. Does remind me a little bit of the idea I had when we discussed this way back during the season, and the rumors came out that a 17th game was going to be brought in. Mine was, again, obviously we knew it was going to be, or they aimed for it to be, AFC versus NFC. And I said, well, maybe we'll just do rank them all as they stand in the standings and just play first against first, second against second, and work all the way through. So it seems like a slightly more complicated way of doing it. But again, I agree with Jake. I like the idea of having some sort of ranked match so that even down towards the bottom, if you're watching your team down there somewhere, as Washington tends to be, it's going to be against a team where we have a shout. It's going to be close. It's against another poor team or an excellent team, depending on where you finish that year. So that's going to be interesting. And then I do like Jake's idea of preserving that last week as the division. I think that is a nice little wrap up to the season. So it's going to be very interesting. Again, like you said, it cycles around. So I think it will keep the matchups pretty fresh. And we might get to see some games that are very hard to come by during the regular season, because there's not a lot of switching between the divisions at the moment.
Oh, it'll be like once every 4 years you face a division from the other conference, I believe it is, mm-hmm. anyway. So it would be interesting for sure. Now, you say that Washington will face a lot more teams at their level. Under this proposed mm-hmm. plan, they're facing the Bills. So you're saying the Bills are at Washington's level.
I mean, we crushed the Steelers last season quite convincingly.
But we know they were pretenders, so...
At the time, they were invincible and we made them look very ordinary. We rattled them so bad they couldn't figure out how to win again after that. So, I think the Bills is going to be close. I think it will be one score game, maybe a Chase Young safety for the win. And I can see that.
What are you talking about? A close game? You're going to get run over. They're going to steamroll you. What are you talking about?
Well, no, Jake, I did see all the media narrative there in the last season about the fact that Buffalo's quarterback is just a poor man's Ben Roethlisberger anyway. So,
like, I wouldn't say I'm a Josh Allen like supporter. I like him. I think he's a good quarterback, but he's definitely a whole lot better than whatever you call the quarterback situation and what the football team is.
But defense wins championships, and we've got a good one of those. So.
Yeah, it's not a championship game, is it?
Yeah, but
as close as we're going to get for the next few years.
But it'd be interesting to hear from Connor and Frank. Frank, I'll start with you. What do you think of the proposed 17th game week?
All right. So, yes, every Bengals game becomes almost like a religious holiday for me. So if there's 16 games, 17 games, 18 games, give me as many games as you can do. I know the players complain about that a little bit because it's a couple more games, a little more chance to get injured, a little more wear and tear on the body. You know, I get that part of it. That's the human element. But as a fan, give me 25 regular season games a year. I mean, I just can't get enough of it. And, you know, I like what they did. Thank you for bringing up all the aspects of the 17th game, because I hadn't read a lot of that stuff. But the fact that you're going to put an AFC team versus an NFC team, it's good because you're going to play teams that you don't often play. You know, they're on that every 4 year rotation. So you might mix it up with some teams that you know, you're breaking that up and playing some teams in between. And, you know, you're playing a team that's at your level, you know, one plays a one, a two plays a two. So it's keeping the competitive balance going as well. So, yeah, you know, give me as many games as they could possibly do. And the way that they're setting it up seems like a fair way to do it.
Perfect. Connor, what do you think of a proposed matchup between the Chiefs and the Packers? What could have been a Super Bowl?
It should have been the Super Bowl. Yeah, it's good. It's more football at the end of the day. Like, that's all. I'll never complain about more football. It is a much bigger toll on the players. And I could see some teams, like, if they comfortably wrapped up the division or even the conference, they could take the last two games as a rest. Like, if you've wrapped it up when you're, say, 15 and, I don't know, 14 and 1 or something, like, you probably won the division. The whole conference at that stage. So you could just have someone basically rest, like get 3 bye weeks.
Yeah, I understand. What would you guys think of, you know, getting rid of 2 of the preseason games and then just having the 17th game week and then adding in maybe a second bye week?
Yeah, I think we can all agree. Like, nobody really watches the preseason games. Well, I certainly start watching it with all the intent to continue watching it, but just the competitiveness isn't there. And I think we could all say we would like to see that many more actual season games. And then, like, to Connor's point on, like, if you were resting your players up, say, in the last couple of weeks, which you could, which teams do, but you'd have that extra week to do it this time. If it was a division game, you might not do that if your division opponent might be close. So there is something that you could think of that way. If the last week was still preserved as the division game, then there'd still be some competitiveness there. You might not necessarily rest all your players.
Well, we move on and we're going to continue our series of looking at all 32 teams and their needs this offseason. If you've missed any of the other teams that we have covered, just go to the previous week's podcast and you'll check them out. Last week especially, I got the chance to speak to John Errico, who is a Vikings fan, about what they're going to need to do to improve for next year, and especially a lot of coach talk as well. He's not one who is a fan of Mike Zimmer, so it's definitely worth checking out if you haven't already. This week we are talking Packers and Bengals with Connor and Frank respectively. We're going to start with the Packers, and Connor, I'm going to start with you. Let's start actually with the 2020 season, another NFC championship and another loss. What did you make of the season as a whole, though?
The season as a whole was solid. There was a lot of gaps, particularly our backfield in defense. Like, it was questionable at times, barring the likes of Jair and Amos, who had great seasons. Our middle linebacker is very unsteady as well. But like Reed Rogers, who had like played better than, well, 2011 for him, like when he last, we won his first MVP. And then we had Devontae Adams just being like the best receiver in the league. Had to drop that in.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it was a solid season. A heartbreaking end. Shouldn't have happened, but like, yeah, it was a tough end to the season. But I think next season we can come back, and depending on the off-season moves and who we lose and how we move pieces around, we could be back up. We could be back in there again.
It's funny speaking about the 2020 season on the Packers as well, because I text and see Connor quite a bit during the season. And for the past few seasons, it's followed the same trend. There's an upwards building trajectory for the Packers, and Connor's mood reflects that trajectory. And then there's a sudden drop off when the Packers lose a game, and then it just shoots off a cliff when they inevitably lose the NFC Championship game.
Well, that is you're saying inevitably losing the NFC Championship. Obviously, it's 2 years in a row that they've lost at this point. And are they turning into bottlers? Is there sort of like a mental block? Is it play calling? Is it coaching? Like, what is stopping the team going to that next step?
Special teams and Kevin King. the two key things there.
You mentioned, though, kind of that your backfield on defense was quite weak throughout the season. Do you think there was, like, was it a more defensive coaching or the skill issue, like, on the players or talent-wise?
A bit of both. Like, we had players, like, we were playing, say, prevent, and you'd have someone, they'd have to get 10 yards, and you'd have someone lined up 15 yards back from as a cornerback, which just doesn't make any sense. We'd Preston Smith, outside linebacker and edge rusher, lining up like in coverage, like it was just, but like not man coverage, not even like zone. Like there was some awful playmaking, and hopefully with our new DC, we'll see a bit of a change. But he doesn't have a great record coming in now.
Who's the new Connor? DC?
Yeah.
Who?
Joe Barry. He was with the Rams and the Lions previously, but had bottom ranked defenses with both. So it's a bit of a risky pickup for him to come in and take over the Packers D.
Yeah. Connor, do you see the defense being a problem again this season, given that the Packers traditionally don't spend a lot of money in free agency, and so it's going to be quite difficult to address, especially cornerbacks going against experienced wide receivers? They need a few seasons to develop. It's very hard to get a plug-and-play corner straight out of college. Is that method or is that ideology going to change with this new DC, do you think? Or can you see it being a problem for another couple of seasons?
I could see it still being a bit of a problem. Again, you can be lucky in the draft. You can get the likes of Jair Alexander come in and just take off in their first season. But you can also have players who come in and they're like headless chickens for two seasons until they kind of like get the mental side of the game down. How much faster the pro game's played. Hopefully we will have someone who comes in and plug and play, like who's just a plug and play and steps up, and hopefully we can pick up a cheap option in free agency. Richard Sherman's been floated out, but I think he might be a bit passing out to come in. He's more a zone corner as well. So yeah, I do think we're going to be our offense is going to have to carry the defense again this year.
Certainly not going to help when you draft another quarterback in the first round. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, let's move into the offseason, talk about some free agents, because there are a few that are coming up on the Green Bay side of things. You've got Corey Lindsley, Christian Kirksey, Ricky Wagner, Kevin King, and Robert Tonyan, to name a few, and Jamal Williams, actually, too. So, and Aaron Jones as well. You are playing GM mode right now. Who are you re-signing? Who are you prioritizing to re-sign out of the list?
The controversy is, I'd say get rid of Jones, get rid of Lindsley. They're going to be two big cap hits. And other players, I'm sure we'll get to that later. But re-sign Tonyan as a priority. Like, he's 10 touchdowns this season. And we've had him as a restricted free agent as well. So, like, now slap a second round tender on him, and no one's coming in to take him then. Aaron Jones, I'd let him walk. I'd take Jamal Williams if we can get him on a team-friendly deal. He said he wants to be a Packer all his, like, for his career. So hopefully we can get him in. He's a good number two option. So we can have him and AJ Dillon in as like a 1-2 punch. Yeah, I like cut the likes of, like, let Kevin King walk. Try and pick up someone else in free agency. Again, because we're so far over the cap, there's going to just have to be people we let walk just to get ourselves back to a proper level to, like, get in our rookies and get in whatever other players we can.
Yeah, and I think there'll have to be a lot of restructuring done, but that's going to be the same for every side this year once they find out what the true cap is going to be, for sure. But I know... Fionn touched on it a bit there as well, that the team don't normally like to sign free agents. They don't like to spend a lot of money in free agents. But surely, if not in free agency in the draft, would one of the priorities not be to get maybe a second true wide receiver to help out Rodgers and Adams?
I don't think so. We were without Alan Lazard all season. Who, when he played, I think he went out in week two, but he played fantastically in the first game and then was solid in the second game until he went out injured. Then, like, we have Devontae Adams, we have Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who, while he can be unsteady with his hands and it can kind of be a 50-50 shot when it goes for a deep ball downfield, he has improved an awful lot, and his ball catching ability has improved. And then we have Robert Tonyan. I don't think we need to splash on a free agent wide receiver. If you can pick one up in the second or third round of the draft, maybe. But again, I think we have bigger priorities than targeting that.
I think the Packers' offensive playmakers are pretty strong, probably in the upper half of the league anyway. But you're brought up by Devontae Adams, and then you have Robert Tonyan stretching the middle, and then you've got a solid run game as well. So I'd agree. I don't see the need to go after, especially one of these free agents. Maybe you get one in the bargain bin. No, when all those free agents are signed and there's somebody left that you like. Maybe you could go after somebody like that, but I certainly wouldn't be spending a first round pick. You definitely have to look at first round pick on a cornerback or something around that.
Well, if you're
also have,
I was just going to say, if you're losing Lindsay as well, I think would some money have to be spent on getting a new center?
Not necessarily, because we have John Runyon, who was drafted last year, who can play as guard and center. And then we had Elton Jenkins, who played center for, I think, 5 games this year and did fantastically. Didn't allow a single sack through. I think he played every single position on the offensive line this season. Our starting left guard. But he's, we have people who we can plug in there and then just find ways to work around it. And then we have David Bakhtiari, who's, an always solid option on the outside. So as long as you have him, you can kind of allow a bit more of a weakness in your left guard. So if you move Jenkins into the centre position, you could put in kind of a stopgap player for now as left guard to kind of, and then you have Bakhtiari there as well to back him up.
Heard Eric Flowers might be available if you're looking for a guy.
No, I don't want to turn himself.
Great, so we'll have a look at the target for next season. Like, surely a Super Bowl appearance at least would be the expectation.
That's it. Rodgers isn't getting any younger. We have to try and get ourselves up there now and get a win and just get him a second Super Bowl. Like, that's the big conversation when you talk of, and like, who's the greatest of all time, which is, it is Brady. As much as I don't like saying it, it is Brady. But Rodgers should be in the conversation, and it's hard to put him in the conversation when he only has one Super Bowl behind him. He's been in 5 NFC Championship games now and only won one. Like, it's, there's always that stat lingering over him.
Through gritted teeth, Connor finally has to agree that Brady is the GOAT. but certainly, from Aaron Rodgers' play over the past few years, I mean, I think last year for sure anyway, like, it has been MVP level. So he does have to be in the discussion for like, even getting into the Hall of Fame. I'm sure he has to be. Yeah, maybe not first round unless he gets that second Super Bowl.
Yeah, he'll get first round. Highest ever passer rating.
That'll be changed by the time he comes around, though.
Highest ever touchdown to interception rate, or lowest ever touchdown to interception ratio. Highest or lowest, I don't know. Whatever the good one is.
But that's grand. Listen, Connor, thanks so much. We're going to move on and we're going to talk a little bit about the Bengals with Frank, of course, host of the unofficial Bengals podcast. So Frank, yeah, we're going to start with yourself and the 2020 season as well, because in your case, I guess it's a little harder to evaluate it after Joe Burrow went down, but try to sum up your thoughts on what you made of the season.
All right. Well, first off, I just want to give Connor some credit on Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, I'm kind of a guy who watches quarterbacks more closely than the other positions, and just the throws and the awareness and, you know, the accuracy. I mean, it's a pleasure watching him play. But, you know, let me move on to another quarterback who I like a little bit better than Aaron Rodgers. So that would be Burrow. So talk about the Bengals 2020 season. I would say, in a word, I would sum it up as a roller coaster, because we start the year with this touted rookie coming out of college, you know, possibly one of the best quarterback prospects ever, but there's no training camp, there's no preseason games. You really don't know what to expect. So we're going into the year on a wing and a prayer, hoping that this guy is the guy that we all thought he was coming out of college. So the first half of the first game goes by and Joe Burrow looks like he every bit the rookie in that game. Second half of the first game, you saw the light go on for this guy. And as you watch him over the subsequent weeks, he just got better and better and better and better. And the Bengals, with a horrific offensive line, with all due respect, were staying in games and getting into shootouts with teams. And it was all based on Joe Burrow, and they were using him. I mean, the game that he got hurt against Washington, he had over 30 pass attempts in the first half. So it was a matter of, like, Joe Burrow is the only thing that's working for this offense. We're going to just keep using it and using it and using it. And I think they got a little bit greedy. You know, they played a good defensive line with that Washington team, and it ended up getting Joe Burrow hurt. So the season was like that for me. It was a mystery on what it was going to be. And then we saw the next great Bengals quarterback. And I've seen them all, guys. You know, I mean, I haven't seen Greg Cook. That's a little bit before my time. But I saw Ken Anderson, Boomer Esiason, Jeff Blake, Carson Palmer. You know, take your pick. And I don't – Boomer Esiason, the light went on pretty quickly for, but I don't think any other quarterback in Bengals history came out of the gate like Joe Burrow. And it's the ability. It's almost those Rodgers-like traits. You know, he has the elusiveness, or had it before the knee injury. We'll go into that in a minute. But the accuracy, the types of throws that he's making, I think the Bengals led the league or were near the top of the league in contested catches. So that's a lot of 50-50 balls that he's getting into guys. And that takes a lot of confidence in yourself and a good arm and good accuracy. And those were the things I was getting from Joe Burrow in that rookie year. And it was a likable guy. It was a guy who came from a relatively poor upbringing, had to fight for everything he got. They, you know, they knocked him out at Ohio State and put in Haskins over him. He recovered from that. So it's not just like, if you look at a guy like Carson Palmer, he came in as, you know, a West Coast, you know, big man on campus, and he wasn't as relatable. Joe Burrow's like one of the guys as well. So in addition to the great ability, he's likable. He's cool when you listen to him talk. And it's someone that even if you don't like the Bengals, you kind of want to root for because, you know, he's like a tough, try hard guy. So that's how the 2020 season was for me. It was a roller coaster. When he went out of there, you know, the team went down worse than I thought they were going to go. So that was a little discouraging. And then at the end, they actually won a couple games, which hurt their draft position. So again, that goes with a pretty crazy season for a Bengals fan.
I think you could probably take them wins, though, when you know next year you're going to come back with one of the top quarterbacks, or at least one of the top quarterback prospects in a few years. So I think it makes them wins a little less bitter when you have that.
True, true. I'll take Bengal win anytime, believe me.
And do you think, is there any news on how Burrow's injury is progressing?
Well, yeah, you know, he had multiple injuries to the same knee, you know, a bunch of different ligaments that were hurt, and you know what's going to happen. He's going to play week one. There, you know, he's not going to want to sit out with that competitive nature. Coach Taylor is going to protect his interests because he doesn't want to lose a bunch of games and lose his job. So he's going to want to see Joe Burrow in there as quickly as possible. You know, it's going to sell more tickets. You know, unfortunately, for the wrong reasons, Joe Burrow is going to play week one. I tore my ACL years back, and it's not a fun injury. And when you hear someone coming back in 7, 8, 9 months, it doesn't feel like the right timeline. And I know these guys are you know, world-class athletes with world-class training, but the body is the body. So personally, I know it's not a popular opinion amongst Bengal fans. I'd like to see him sit out the first month of the season. You know, maybe we get a veteran quarterback in there that can go 2-2 over that span, you know, not totally tank the season. You know, Burrow waits a little bit more time, comes back in a month or so into the season. We're a 500 team. He takes us, you know, as far as he can take us next year.
Yeah, and another injury issue that you had to sort of deal with on the offensive side, I think, that maybe wasn't as noticeable or hurt as much as probably Joe Mixon. In a year that he signed his extension as well. Is Joe Mixon sort of a player that you feel is going to be important to the Bengals now over the next few years?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it illustrates how a lot of people put big money into running backs. You know, Ezekiel Elliott got a big contract. McCaffrey got a big contract. Mixon got a big contract. All those guys were fighting with injuries. So it's going to make a statement on the NFL for years to come on, you know, how much we're going to pay these elite running backs. But yeah, Mixon's right there. Mixon's a great running back. He, you know, he limped out of the sixth game last year against the Colts after scoring a touchdown. And I was like, oh, you know, he's a little banged up. He'll be back in the second half. And, you know, it went to the next week, the next week, the next week, the next week. And then as it got near the end, you were like, you know, don't even put him in, save him for next year. But yes, Joe Mixon is a very valuable piece to this team. And I know across the sports world, people have respect for him as a player. But until you watch him play game after game like I do, you realize he really is one of the best running backs in the league.
Was he sort of hurt mostly, not physically, but sort of his stats and maybe his perception in the league hurt a little bit by maybe the weakness on the offensive line?
Oh, without a doubt. And you know, we saw that. I'm going to bounce a little bit to the Super Bowl and just various things that we've been talking about regarding the offensive lines. You know, look at even Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. They made him look bad because the offensive line was vulnerable. And you see that everywhere. Joe Burrow was running for his life all last year. And the fact that he put up the numbers that he did was unbelievable with that offensive line. And then you have a guy like Joe Mixon. You know, you put him on the Browns and he'd probably be, you know, putting up similar numbers to like a Kareem Hunt or something. But, you know, the offensive line is going to kill you. And if you look across the league, I think it's becoming a little bit of a problem. There's not that many teams that have great offensive lines. I mean, you know, I'm thinking the Browns, the Colts, the Saints. I'm sure you guys could rattle off a couple others. I mean, the Packers have a decent defensive line, offensive line. But I think across the league, we're seeing that there's a lot of deficiencies on the line. And both of those Super Bowl teams didn't have great offensive lines. So that's something that we're going to be looking for as a trend in the NFL in the future, is hoarding good offensive linemen, drafting them high, and protecting these quarterbacks, because even the best ones, you know, can't do anything if they don't have time to throw.
Yeah, definitely. I think I agree with you there. I think it's definitely a position that sort of has gone down in a lot of, I think, coaches' estimation in the last few years, and we're not seeing as many standout offensive linemen coming out drafts either from college. Obviously, you get the headline ones as well. I think it was a Tristan Wolfs from in Tampa Bay, and you got Mickey Beacon, yeah, as well. So there are some good ones, but I don't think there's a steady flow of them there. So it's sort of difficult now for teams to get a collection of five guys that are just going to protect, or, you know, to be D guys. It's sort of maybe two or three, and then you've got two that have to sort of plug in some gaps every now and again. But Frank, I want to talk about some of the notable free agents that the team have this coming off season. A few, for anyone who aren't aware: AJ Green, John Ross, William Jackson, Christian Covington, Brandon Wilson, just to name a few. Who would you like to see the team prioritize in re-signing?
Well, the main free agent I want us to re-sign is Mackenzie Alexander. Now, again, you had a Viking expert on a couple weeks back. I'm sure they can vouch for this guy. He was a slot corner that we signed on a one-year deal and was, aside from Jesse Bates, was the best player on our defense. So I'm campaigning on my podcast every week to bring this guy back. I hope it doesn't, you know, fall under the rug and we don't get this guy back. But, I mean, he was immensely important to this team. And now to move on to the current free agents of the Bengals, I'm not going to talk about every one of them, but the Bengals have a habit of wanting to bring their own guys back, regardless of the skill level. And I think that they're going to overpay and bring back William Jackson. I mean, you do need a good corner, but I know they're going to overpay him. And I know they're going to overpay Carl Lawson. So you're going to see those guys back in Bengal stripes this season, but at an amount that I kind of wish they would spend elsewhere.
Yeah, and what areas would you be looking at in terms of free agency, looking at outside in the draft? Obviously, the protection for Burrow is a must, but maybe one also potential area of need will probably be wide receiver, with the likes of Green and Ross potentially leaving. So you'll sort of need those targets to throw to.
Yeah, you know, for free agency, I'm going to just talk about two quick areas. Defensively, they could use a quality free agent on every level. They could use another interior defensive lineman or an edge rusher. They need a thumper linebacker because the guys they drafted are like third down linebackers. So they need a force in the middle, and you can always use a good corner. So defensively, you know, grab a guy in each level if you can. But here's the key to fixing the Bengals, in my opinion. And it's a little extreme, but I say you go with four new offensive linemen this year. You take one with that first pick in the draft. You take one in the second or third round of the draft, a guard and a tackle. And then in free agency, I think the most intelligent way the Bengals can approach it is make a list of the top guards, make a list of the top tackles. And I'm not even going to rattle off. I'll leave it to the experts to say who they are. But you grab one of the top three or four tackles. You grab one of the top three or four guards. You mix them with those two high draft picks. You bring in four new offensive linemen. The guys that are on the team now can fight for the other spot or fight for rotational roles, and you protect Burrow. I agree with you. They're going to need another marquee wide receiver, but you can't get it all in 1 year. So I think that's going to be another year away, and they're going to work with the skill position players they have. But if you can keep Burrow safe, and I saw that this year when they played Tennessee, they blew out the Titans because the offensive line happened to have a good day. So it's like, you know, protect this guy, sky's the limit. So that's going to be first priority for new offensive linemen for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Sure, none of us want to really see Bobby Hart fight it out for another offensive line gig in the NFL. But you also had T. Higgins as a promising wide receiver, did you not?
Without a doubt. And that's the thing with rookie wide receivers. They often say it takes 2 to 3 years for the light to come on and these guys to be dominant. And I was expecting that out of him. You know, coming out of college, he should have been a first rounder. Everyone was talking him up like he was going to be one of the best. And I was like, just be patient with him, everybody. And same thing as Burrow. I mean, it didn't happen in the first game, but it was about game four, game five. You saw the light go on, and he was running great professional veteran routes, which was the main key to his success, was the route running. And then he obviously has the hands, the size, the jumping ability, the run after the catch. That kid is going to be a superstar. So they really struck gold on those first two rounds of last year.
Frank, a guy that you haven't brought up that was mentioned at the top of the free agent list, AJ Green, who from my kind of far away view of the Bengals will be one of the synonymous players of the Bengals over the last maybe five seasons or however long he's been there, especially under Andy Dalton's reign. Has the attitude towards him changed over the last season. I don't remember if he got injured or not, but I remember seeing over the last couple of games, even the commentary was noticing that he really had a terrible attitude around on the pitch, running his routes on the sideline. Is that something that the Bengals fans have almost excommunicated him for already, or are you guys waiting to see what the background or the front office staff decide to do with him?
Nah, it's tough when it comes to AJ because, you know, aside from the old time Bengals, I think he's our most legitimate Hall of Fame candidate, but I don't know if he's going to get in because of the lack of rings. But, and, you know, he was one of my favorite Bengals for a long time, I'm going to say. Joe Burrow is now my favorite Bengal. It's, you know, for just the whole reasons behind everything I said before. But when it comes to AJ Green, it's sad seeing the end of a player's career. And you feel like he lost a step. And I hate to say it because, you know, I really revered this guy for a long time. But when you looked at if you look at the last 3 years, two of them, he was hurt for most of the year. And then this year, he just couldn't get it going. And, you know, there's even times they lined up at the line of scrimmage and like Boyd is like telling AJ what to do. And I'm like, I thought AJ was like the alpha here. And, you know, he'd be telling everybody where to line up. So it just felt like a kind of a lost season for him. But I think it's physical. And, you know, you see that across the NFL. When you have these taller wide receivers, they don't last as long. You know, you can make a couple examples for the bigger guys like that. But if you think about wide receivers that are 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", they tend to have shorter careers than the guys that are a little bit smaller than that. And I think that's what's happening with AJ. You know, it's just a long body with long legs and a lot of punishment on those legs. It catches up with you after a while. So, yeah. You know, AJ's going to go to another team. I hope he goes to a contender because I want to see good things for him. But he's seen his last day in stripes, and no one's hating on him for it. It's just a natural evolution, you know, of everybody. We all get old.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I remember correctly, did he have turf toe at one point during the season?
Yeah, it was the season before. He had like a turf toe injury that just lingered and got worse and worse. He actually needed surgery on it. And then he had an ankle injury. He got rolled up on like the first day of camp last year. So it's been tough for him. And like I said, we kind of saw the results of that this year.
Yeah, I even noticed. I don't watch a lot of Bengals games, but I even noticed that he had lost a step in his game. All right, it'll be definitely sad to see him on another team. But hopefully, as you say, he gets onto a team that contends and at least can put him up for a Super Bowl. Hopefully, for his seems like a lot of end of eras for this season in the NFL for a lot of players.
Yeah, true.
AJ Green to the Packers confirmed there. We're saying it now.
trade for Devontae Adams.
Stop trying to get rid of Devontae.
I'm sure if you put AJ Green on a team like that, I think he would have some productive games and productive snaps. Mm-hmm. Just like if you put John Ross on the Chiefs, you know, we might all be talking about John Ross, oddly enough.
Yeah. Well, actually, some breaking news from avid listener to the show, Adam Schefter. Frank, I want to throw this at you, see what you think, because former Falcons safety Ricardo Allen visited the Cincinnati Bengals today. What would you think of Allen signing?
You know what? I would welcome in another good safety. Von Bell is a great run-stopping safety. Jesse Bates is a good all-around safety. If you can bring in some more talent there, I'm fully aboard, because the other two guys they have there are more special teams-oriented than can actually give you productive defensive snaps. So I'm looking for them to add another safety. I didn't realize they were looking at him, and thank you for breaking that to me.
Yeah, it just popped up my phone also.
So tell me, what do you make of Zach Taylor as head coach, though? Is he trending the team in the right direction? Because now, obviously, they're in such a stacked division with the Browns looking like they've got their house in order. So what would you want to see next year to convince you that Taylor is the right man to lead the team?
Yeah, it's tough with him too. I was always on his side because I think he's an intelligent coach. I think he's a good motivator. He's a good speaker. He's got good ideas. I think the play calling and head coaching at the same time is a problem. And I think that's been one of the issues over his first couple years. So the jury's out on him. And I have to say, in full disclosure, I got a little upset with him after the Washington game when the offensive line was playing so poorly and they had Joe Burrow throw that many times. I thought that was reckless behavior out of a coach. And I didn't feel like he owned up to it properly enough. He basically just said, "Hey, we're trying to win the game here." And I was like, he kind of lost me a little bit there, but it's not lost forever. I'm a Bengal fan. I'm right back in his corner, But I'm just letting you know that, you know, that those kind of things upset me from what he did last year. I'm going to say the Bengals need to go 500 this year for him to retain his job. And it would be fun to see them go 9-7 at least. I know, or 10-7 with the 17th game. I know a lot of people probably think I'm crazy. I always predict the Bengals to go 11-5 because that's just my team. I don't care who's, I don't care if it's a freshman college quarterback in them, I would say 11-5. But the reality is, if they can hover around 500, you know, maybe sneak in for that seventh seed, that would be an amazing year for the Bengals.
Okay. Well, there's definitely some interesting teams on I'm just looking at just your opponents for next year. And you've got Green Bay, Kansas City, the Chargers, Vikings, Steelers, and Jaguars at home. And then when you're going away, you're looking at the Bears, Broncos, Lions, Raiders, and the Jets. So there is definitely a chance to go 500 for sure. Do you think, though, like when I saw the appointment of Zach Taylor, it seemed as though they were trying to hop on the Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan bandwagon. Obviously, he is a Sean McVay disciple working on his staff before getting the job. You know, was it a case that the Bengals hired him for, okay, he looks a bit like Sean McVay, he worked with Sean McVay, maybe he can be the next Sean McVay?
100%. That's exactly what they were going for. And, you know, judging by the way that Coach Taylor speaks and carries himself, I know that he interviewed very well. So the Bengals fully believe that they had the next McVay as their head coach. Whether that is true, that remains to be seen. Apparently, as of now, that is not true, but we will see what the future brings.
Cool. And finally, Frank, before we let you go, where can people find your podcast and socials?
You can find me at Cincy Bengals Pod on Instagram or Twitter. And the Unofficial Bengals Podcast is the name of the show. I really, really appreciate you guys having me on. This was a lot of fun.
No problem. I think that's actually a good place to call it. But before we go, once again, if you can, please like this video and subscribe to the Dynamo Podcast Network to get the podcast each and every week. Alternatively, just search for the Dynamo Podcast Network on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts to find us there as well. And make sure you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/UnderCenterPod, as well as our Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, all at UnderCenterPod. Frank and Connor, thanks for coming on today. Hopefully we'll get a chance to speak to you guys again in the near future.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Thanks, guys.
Fionn and Jake, as always, thank you guys for coming on.
Our pleasure.
Appreciate it.
That is it for the show this week. Make sure you tune in again next week, where we'll be talking about another two teams and looking at their off-season needs. But until then, stay safe and we'll see you again.